Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I am joined, as always, by a couple luminaries from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've got Lori Nichols. She is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering quite often the Milwaukee Bucks, columnist extraordinaire. And on the other line, got Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Jim, we have a new head coach, the Milwaukee Bucks, at least reportedly. It's not official yet, which is kind of weird. Officially or unofficially have hired Adrian Griffin as the next head coach, the 17th coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. He is a former Toronto Raptors assistant. He's been an assistant in the NBA for 15 years, including with the Milwaukee Bucks, started back in 2008. Right after the end of his playing career, actually got cut from the Bucks roster, and Scott Skiles put him on staff right away, and he kind of just worked his way up from there. He's been an attractive head coaching candidate for quite some time, and now he is in fact Milwaukee Bucks head coach, but a first time head coach, so a guy without a track record for better or worse. So Jim, I'm going to start with you because honestly, I was pretty surprised. I figured that if it was going to be one of the three names that were forwarded as sort of the quote unquote finalists, even though we know they weren't exactly finalists, Adrian Griffin was certainly the long shot of the three, with Nick Nurse and Kenny Atkinson both in the mix as well. Nick Nurse now going to the 76ers, we've learned, and there's some front office changes going on in Golden State, so it would not surprise me if Kenny Atkinson ended up as head coach of the Warriors with Steve Kerr moving up to the front office. That's just speculation on my part, but were you surprised that Adrian Griffin was the guy, or did you maybe have a sense that they were going to go a little bit with a non-traditional approach and bring in somebody who didn't have head coaching experience?
No, I wasn't surprised at all, especially once it became apparent early in the week that Giannis was as heavily involved as he was, which one of, and I'm glad you said that, they were not just the three finalists. I know it doesn't really matter who the other people were, but there were at least one other one, and I know that Giannis took this very seriously. One of those meetings went at least 2 hours.
Wow.
So I think the fact that he was that involved, and you know, and I had reported this in several pieces after Mike Budenholzer was fired, that the players, and Giannis in particular, wanted a coach they felt they could really relate to, have a different personal connection with, for lack of a better phrase. What does that mean? They'll have to answer that, but I mean, Mike Budenholzer admitted in the piece we ran over the weekend that there was a bit of a – he never really clicked with Giannis.
Hmm.
You know, yes, you could coach him hard. Yes, you can have him be a better player. There's no doubt that Mike Budenholzer came in and Giannis becomes, you know, a top 75 all-time player. Like, that was a success. But there just wasn't – there was a little bit of a distance there. And I think for as great as they were on the court – you know, they're looking for a little something else, you know, especially once the decision was made, you know, once ownership made the call, essentially, that there was going to be a coaching change. I don't blame the players, and Giannis in particular, for sort of exerting some influence or wanting to say what they were looking for. So when you look at the personalities of Nick Nurse, Kenny Atkinson, I would say would be the in-between of the two. Like if Adrian Griffin's your player's coach, quote unquote, Nick Nurse, I think is a little more towards the Budenholzer spectrum. Atkins is probably in between from what I read. I think Steve Kerr called him the jalapeno on their coaching staff. you know, still could relate to some guys, but, you know, had a little bit of some edge to him. So, yeah, I think as we zoom out a little bit, JR, this makes sense in a lot of ways. And now we'll just have to see what sort of style, what sort of systems, and obviously what did he sell Giannis on in terms of maybe pushing him back to more MVPs.
You can find what Jim wrote kind of in the aftermath here at jsonline.com about the sort of central nature of Giannis's relationship with the head coach. I know that kind of goes without saying that should be a big component of it, but I thought you really laid that out pretty well. Lori, you've already written or will be publishing soon your take on it, which I know is mostly positive, but I'd be curious to know your thoughts, to know if you were surprised by the fact that we were talking, you know, Jim said he wasn't. but that this guy is a guy that we don't know a lot about. I mean, assistant coaches, you know, we've talked about this before, by their nature, not often made available to media. You don't really learn the nuances of what assistant coaches are good at or not good at. He's been around the block, 15 years in this league. Mm-hmm. He's been with multiple teams, with Oklahoma City and Orlando and Chicago and Milwaukee. I mean, he's had a lot of experience. Toronto, of course. But we still don't know a lot about him. So what? Give me a little sneak preview of what you were writing about today.
Oh my gosh, surprised! I didn't even know they hired a head coach. Like, I had been waiting for so long and checked out on Memorial Weekend. I was like, oh, like 10 hours ago, the Bucks hired a head coach. That's how like checked out I was. How many days was it, Jim, that the coaching search was?
Well, considering, like, as JR said at the top, it's not official yet, so I guess we're still counting, but it's still like, it was about 3 weeks.
It was about 3 weeks, okay.
Yeah, like May 4th to 20, yeah, a little over 3 weeks.
Yeah, so we discussed this previously on this fantastic podcast, and I asked you guys what top assistant is out there right now, because I think this is a really good fit for what we know right now. We're very limited in what we know right now about Adrian Griffin. But we do know that he has played in the CBA, the United States Basketball League, the NCAA with the top team in Seton Hall. We know he's played in the NBA. He averaged, what, like 4 points a game, and yet he had six, seven, eight seasons. I don't even know, six teams, something like it. He's been everywhere, and he's played internationally. He was, you know, a scout on the International World Cup team in 2014, where he was surrounded with a bunch of great coaches like Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim and people like that. So I think because his resume is so impressive, I'm kind of surprised that somebody else didn't take a chance on him earlier. And I'm not sure how much of a high risk this is, other than the fact that he hasn't won a championship before. His resume is pretty incredible, not only in where he's played, how much he's played, the fact that he started an NBA Finals game for the Dallas Mavericks in 2006, the fact that he's, you know, played with Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Terry, and then has coached like he in all these different teams, and he has such an expansive NBA background. I could see why just that alone makes him appealing to Giannis Antetokounmpo, because Giannis, first of all, just in hearing you guys reflecting back, I can't really remember a time that Giannis really complimented his coaches in the last 5 years for make a great call or great play or anything like that. I might just be blanking out, but Giannis does regularly compliment NBA players. He has a lot of respect even for his top competitors. He will, at All-Star games or at the beginning of seasons or end of seasons, will talk about how much he respects people and how much they challenge him. And so having that playing background like Adrian Griffin does, I think has got to be appealing. And I do think, though, that we should keep track of all the candidates and see how this plays out. Jim, I was curious as to who the fourth serious candidate was, because my last count, you had like 10 guys that were in circulation at one point in one of your stories. And, you know, I want to see what, you know, 5 years from now, I want to look back and see if this was like a big hire, you know, something that changed the franchise. Is this a momentous time in the franchise history, or will this go down as like an experiment that didn't work out? But who is the fourth person? Serious person.
Yeah. I don't quite know if I can say that, but I gotcha. Do know. Yeah. Okay. Put it this way. He was on the list. Of that, Lori, you're right. Of the 10, I believe, that interviewed initially with John Horst.
Okay.
And those occurred in person. I don't know if they were all in person, if some were Zoom or not.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But yeah, there was, yeah. So like, it's in that group. It wasn't some sort of mystery, like outlier. And yeah, I love what you said there, Lori, where you're like, I'm not sure what kind of risk this is. I'll agree with that, because what are we talking about? Like, the risk is, if you're, let's look at the Eastern Conference Finals with Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah.
Right? First year head coach. What did we hear about? Oh, he didn't call this timeout then. Or what about this substitution then? Well, guess what? Those were the same complaints about Mike Budenholzer, championship winning coach who'd been doing it for 10 years. Like, it's kind of like, Lori, when we covered the NFL and you had either Mike McCarthy complaints or Matt LaFleur. What do you hear? Game management, time management. This, like, it's sort of the same. Like, so, yeah, has Adrian Griffin been there? No, he hasn't been in the lead chair. Are there going to be times where it's obvious, you know, oh, maybe I should have called a timeout, or oh, maybe this matchup wasn't great? Sure, but, like, for the most part, like, that's the complaint. And I don't know. Lori, I agree with you. I think it's a really interesting hire when you factor in all of that background. Mm. And to be quite honest, first year head coaches, I mentioned Mazzulla. Eric Spoelstra was a first year head coach when Pat Riley said, hey, guess what? Here's Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh. Go win. Right? Like, right. That's and look where he is now. And he had his issues. LeBron James famously bumped Spoelstra, right? Like, coming off,
oh, yeah,
it was like the shoulder bump thing. Like, you know, that's probably like way left field in terms of, oh my God, the star is not connecting with the new guy. What is the new guy doing? To now you look at Eric Spoelstra now and what he does. So yeah, Lori, time will tell. But I think it's not just hey, Giannis signed off on him, hire. I do think Adrian Griffin has earned this right. I think he deserves to be in the chair. Now it's just a matter of, okay, put it together and go do it.
Okay, there's also one sticky thing in the background here that I'll let both of you guys address if you'd like. There is some history where his wife had posted, I believe in 2020, accusing Adrian Griffin, they were divorced at the time, I believe so, accusing him of sort of domestic, you know, kind of some nasty things, domestic violence, abuse, essentially. He flatly denied them. There was a defamation lawsuit filed by Adrian Griffin against his ex-wife for defamation that I believe has settled, I believe, in 2022. His kids have come out in support of him based on some of the reporting I was reading. So it's an interesting situation. Of course, I'm sure the Bucks.
Sorry, did they settle or did he drop it?
Jim wrote it was settled. Do I have that wrong?
Sorry. Yes.
It
was settled.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
So, that's an important detail to note. That is something that's sticking out there. Now, it does sound complicated. I'm sure the Bucks looked into this and did some due diligence, but that, I think that adds to the risk, certainly, when you bring somebody into a new position who doesn't have head coaching experience and there's already this thing kind of simmering in the background. And, you know, maybe it's completely at face value. Not, you know, it is a situation where these were incorrect accusations, but also something that I'm sure the Bucks have to deal with. So Jim, just real quickly, like, what do you think about those? And I'm sure the Bucks are going to want to will address these when we ultimately get a head coaching hire announcement and a press conference and the whole thing. But what does that mean to you? Where does that fit into this process?
Yeah, covering sports long enough. Unfortunately, these all of off-court situations, you know, you cover it, right? And all I can do is report what has been done. So, yes, there were social media accusations, which are what they are. He is the one who brought it to court. He's the one who took it to, you know, litigation by suing her. And it was settled, at least the settlement agreement I read was, you know, it was settled and then dismissed. So I don't know if that's the same as dropped, Lori, but like it was dismissed after. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then that was it. I mean, when the accusations came up in the bubble, the NBA nor the Toronto Raptors did anything about it in terms of, you know, was there a pandemic leave or anything to a denial and you know, whatever investigations, if there were any, by the team and league didn't result in any punishment. So in terms of an opinion, that's what happened. So that I don't, that's all I can really say about that. But you're right. I'm sure the Bucks and Adrian Griffin will be asked about that.
Lori, what about you in term? I mean, because obviously this is something that a lot of people are going to want to know more about. They're going to want to know that the Bucks did their due diligence here. So what does this raise alarm bells for you? Or is it a similar situation where you just kind of have to go with how the team's reacted and take it at face value until you learn anything else?
God, no.
Okay.
No, I don't take any of that at face value. I don't like the accusation at all. But we don't have enough information to make any kind of judgment, you know, even with all this time. And I'm not, you know, this won't be addressed unless some of us push for an answer. I will not judge anything based on social media rumors or anything like that. You can only do that with interviews and with reporting and if you have to pull public records or anything like that. In a case like this, if the suit was dismissed, there may be certain restrictions on not talking about it publicly. So we may never get a full or complete answer on that. There's nothing I won't make any judgment on it one way or another because we just don't have enough information. But in the past, when I've covered athletes who have been accused of this sort of stuff or coaches, I mean, I know that stuff was out there with Jason Kidd. And, you know, it was in the back of my mind every time I talked to Jason Kidd with that stuff. So
sure, yeah.
I don't know how to erase that. I'm not a robot, so I can't, you know, but you don't want to judge somebody. It's not fair if it's false. So but there's nothing we can do about it until we have more facts and more information.
Yeah. From an on-the-court perspective, the Toronto Raptors are obviously a team that beat the Bucks in 2019. Adrian Griffin is on that staff. Nick Nurse, of course, the head coach of the team that beat the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals in 6 games on their way to the NBA championship. They've been a little up and down since then. They had a really good follow-up season, which obviously ended in the bubble, so that was kind of a whole thing. But they were a 500 team this year. I think you could make the argument that the Raptors aren't necessarily this hotbed cradle of coaches that or haven't merited becoming that because obviously now two members of that staff are going to be head coaches elsewhere in the 2023-24 NBA season. So does looking at the Raptors, Jim, does that change? Does that inform anything about this? Like, does it feel a little strange that the Bucks are so heavily pursuing guys who were affiliated with the Toronto Raptors, or is there something about that system that you think is appealing here in Milwaukee from a game standpoint?
It's interesting because the personnel is so different. Like the Raptors have really young 6'6" to 6'9" guys who run around, and the Bucks have none of those types of players. So on one hand, I think what's probably appealing is the fact that the Raptors were so good at devising a game plan, executing the game plan, and then if it wasn't working, having something else in the tank, having other cards to play. If there's a criticism of Mike Budenholzer, that was that sort of rigidity, you know, at least in game, in season. I think he probably doesn't get enough credit for the changes they made in the summers and what they put in training camp in the preseasons. And then the Bucks players did very well. But I think it's that in-game stuff, JR, that you can look to where, you know, if there's a benefit to talking to Nick Nurse and Adrian Griffin, you could probably find out from both who did what maybe. Right. Cause that's always the question. Well, what did this guy really do on the staff? Well, now you had his employer basically also in the same process. So maybe, you know, there was some sharing there and they were able to figure that out. But I think if there's an appeal, JR, it's not so much how the Raptors played. It's maybe, you know, in terms of, you know, a pressure ball, you know, ball attacking sort of style. Like, I don't know if the Bucks have that kind of personnel, but it's really more the other stuff, that ability to have multiple options in games and to be able to pull that out when necessary.
Lori, I'm going to ask Jim about this a little bit too, but from Jim's reporting and other reporting out there, it sounds like Chris Middleton was a big part of this process as well, which might be maybe the most newsy thing about this whole thing, because Chris Middleton's status for next season is very much in doubt. So I'm seeing him participate in kind of, I don't know if interviewing is quite the right word, but meeting with candidates and obviously I'm sure giving his opinion about them certainly suggests that he has an interest in being part of the Milwaukee Bucks picture long term. I don't know if that struck you in any particular way or if maybe not. You know, it could just be, you know, having another star player weigh in is whether or not they're going to be here long term is good due diligence. And, you know, at some point I'll want to steer the conversation about if Adrian Griffin is a hire that you think is going to be here for a long period of time, because like we've talked about before, the Bucks could be going into a rebuilding phase. Not going to happen immediately, but it's on the immediate horizon. And if this is, in your mind, if you think this is the type of thing that would bridge that would go from, okay, a team that can compete for the NBA title to a team that now has to circle the wagons and figure out either how to rebuild again around Giannis or rebuild completely without Giannis. So that's just something I'm kind of rambling, something I'm thinking about. But give me your thoughts on Chris Middleton getting involved and maybe that means some good things for the future for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, I didn't. Once Jim told us on this podcast like 3 weeks ago or whatever it was that Chris was all but for sure coming back, I didn't think twice about that. In fact, I think if you're going to talk to Giannis, you should talk to Chris, just because it needs to look equal. I mean, Chris is just as much a part of this organization and has been here from the beginning. And that 10-year tandem that he's had with Giannis is part of that. And I really think Chris is undervalued in another way, in that he does have a coach's mind. He breaks down film and obsesses over film and looks at plays and matchups and tendencies of opponents probably more than any NBA player I've ever covered. And that doesn't mean much. Jim's opinion would mean much. But no, I didn't bat an eye when I saw or read that. And Jim, is that still the case where you're still expecting Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton back like 97-98% sure for next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's my feel. I haven't gotten any sort of wind or feeling otherwise. I mean, they didn't hire Larry Brown. They didn't hire Mike Krzyzewski. Like, Adrian Griffin could be the hire for the next 5-7 years. I don't know. Doc Rivers lasted only 3 in Philly, so maybe this is going more the NFL way, where NBA coaches are just like, they get 2-3 years and that's it. I don't know. But I don't think I haven't heard anything different, mm-hmm. Lori, where I would change my mind on that. I feel like, yeah, you want Chris involved, and who knows? This may help persuade Chris and Brooke to return. That is their choice as a free agent and a player option. And maybe this is a big part of that as well with, with having a new voice and being like, hey, we can rock with this guy, and we, you know, feel like what he can do with us can put us in a better position. And look, as I said, the Bucks players as they're older, but they've gotten better. Like, Jrue Holiday had a career year at 31. Brooke Lopez had a renaissance year at 35. I'm not going to sit here and say that these guys are about to fall off the table. So if they feel, yeah, I would say, A, yes, I still, it's 97-98% chance. And, you know, this may have helped them in a way of like, okay, yeah, let's hear new voice, new schemes, new ideas. Let's get back in and run it back.
Hey, Jrue is going to turn 33 in a month.
33.
Or a couple weeks. Hey, you know, I think that's so interesting too, because it's not the coach who says, okay, who do the Bucks have? Should I come here? It's the players going, who are you going to get as a coach to keep me here? But Jim, let me ask you this. Why haven't the Bucks made it's okay, I don't want to jinx it. It's 3:00 on Tuesday. Why haven't the Bucks, and you broke the story Saturday, I don't even, everything's a blur. Why haven't they announced it yet? What do you think is the reason?
That's a great question. The longer it goes, it does make you wonder,
right?
Like, what's going on in the hangup of
right.
of the contract negotiations. I guess it is a holiday, and I don't know. Great point. Maybe they were, you know, if it's already signed, sealed, delivered, and maybe they're looking for a good time to optimize it. I don't know the Brewers' schedule, for instance.
Maybe
there's that. I don't, look, weird things have happened. I don't know, Laura, if you remember when the Bears called a press conference to hire Dave McGinnis, and everybody was there and everybody showed up but Dave McGinnis. So, you know, I think you always just want to make sure everything is for sure buttoned up. And and who knows? I don't know where Adrian Griffin lives. I don't know where his family is. This is a big deal for him. Maybe there's just some logistics of, I would like family here for this, and people have to fly in. I don't know if this is the first head coach under the new ownership structure of Wes Edens and Jimmy and Dee Haslam. Do Jimmy and Dee want to be involved? I don't know. If so, maybe they, I have no clue, but I you know, it is a little strange that they haven't at least sent out a release yet to say, hey, it's official with all the platitudes. And so who knows? Maybe by the time you're listening to this podcast, that will already be out. But it is interesting.
Yeah. And Jimmy Haslam's involvement is definitely one of the questions I would still have in this. Not that it's really all that crucial, but it is an interesting curiosity. How much input did the sort of new guy in the ownership team have when it came to hiring a new coach? I mean, 3 weeks seems like a long time to be without a head coach, but it's not really. It came together, I would say, like in the grand scheme of things, relatively quickly. There are still definitely some openings out there in the NBA. So either he moved nimbly or he sort of just ceded the floor to Wes Edens and let him do his thing. I'd be curious to know. So the Brewers back in town June 6th. Will Adrian Griffin be throwing first pitch at the June 6th game against Baltimore back at American Family Field? I guess it remains to be seen. But Jim, as far as questions that you still have, when this is announced, if this is announced, I guess, but more likely, when is it announced, when there's a press conference, what do we still need to really know? Is it just about getting a sense of who Adrian Griffin is? Because we don't really have that concretely yet? Or are there more things that you're going to be really curious about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll have a list of questions as we get there, but some are unanswerable until we see the Milwaukee Bucks play. Some are unanswerable until we get a chance to speak to Giannis, Chris, Drew, right? So, but to me, look, they made this decision, as John Horst said, because they didn't get to where they thought they should have been at the end of the season. Now, I would love it for Wes Edens, at least, to be present, because it sounds like ownership had a big hand in that decision. Or, I guess, if they're not available, we'll have to ask Adrian. What were you told? Mike Budenholzer won 70% of his games. So, what's... what's the standard? What are you being held to? And maybe he won't answer that. Maybe it's to a coach, it's sort of a nebulous thing. So for me, that's kind of the number one thing is you're following a heck of a coach that had a lot of success. What's the standard and how do you plan on meeting that in year one? when you guys get together in September, October.
Lori, do you have any other questions remaining here?
Oh, a ton. are you kidding? Well, I would want to know what Adrian Griffin's top responsibilities were in Toronto. I know he coached one game. He's filled in as a head coach for one. But what were his basic, behind-the-scenes responsibilities? And then how does that translate over to his job now? He's known as a developer, as somebody who's developed the game of Jimmy Butler and somebody who works very hands-on with players. I don't know if you can do that as much as a head coach. Do you have to segue into more of a managerial role as a head coach and delegate that responsibility to your assistants? Or can you be hands-on with working with somebody, with hand placement on the ball, with shot selection, with comfort of, he's a shooting guard. So, working on things like that, that to me is one of the great appeals about having him as a coach. Yeah, I would like to see Giannis Antetokounmpo continue to work on his outside game and his jump shot. And I would like to see who's going to develop somebody like Marjan Beauchamp, who was a rookie draft pick last year and showed potential for a while and then was basically shelved for the season. And then, you know, and kind of because there's so much talent on the team that, you know, Beauchamp didn't play, but still you want to know, is the development there? So will that come from Griffin or will that come from his staff? And then another question I really have for Griffin and general manager John Horst is, what's this relationship going to be like? Is Horst going to bring in certain players and free agents like Joe Ingles and expect, based on that contract financial commitment, that that person play, versus the coach who says, well, you know, I've got a young guy who's outplaying, you know, a veteran. I want to play the young guy. Like, does Horst bring in the players and say, here's the deck of cards that you have to play with, do the best you can? Or is Horst more hands-on and saying, well, I want to see certain guys on the court based on who I signed? Because that's something new that the head coach needs to work out with the general manager. And a first-year head coach may not, you know, throw his weight around a little bit and say, look, this is my show. I need to do what's best. Because I think that, you know, I didn't really buy that answer from the Bucks that, well, we didn't get as far as we wanted to, as the excuse for firing Mike Budenholzer. Reading between the lines a lot and with, you know, my gut feeling on it, it kind of seemed like the team was going in a different direction in that it wanted a head coach who maybe played different guys at different times and managed minutes differently. And I wonder if that's true. And if so, how much is that the role of the new head coach? Just managing rotations, managing minutes, and having a blend of veteran and young and up-and-coming players. And I understand maybe that's not even an issue, right? Are there no draft picks coming in this year because they traded them all away for Jay Crowder or whatever? But that those are like just a few of my questions, and I have 90 more, but I won't bore you.
All right. Well, we will obviously have more on this at jsonline.com. There's going to be an official announcement at some point, one assumes, and a press conference, and probably some takeaways, some things to glean from that, but also possibly just a lot more to discuss here in the offseason. We do have a free agency period that is not in the too distant future, and that's going to certainly be top of mind. The Miami Heat, the team that defeated the Bucks, are now in the NBA Finals. They held off a hard charge from Boston that almost came back from 3-0 down, forced a game 7. But Miami prevails. Jimmy Butler and the 8th-seeded Heat are in the finals, the first 8th-seeded team to make it in a non-strike year into the NBA Finals. So I suppose that's a little bit of solace for the Bucks. No, probably not. But we'll definitely have more on this podcast and elsewhere as things develop. Any last thoughts, Jim, out there in out there in the world before we move on?
I mean, this could be a whole other podcast, but I think Jimmy Butler's Plato's way to the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, baby. Yes, we discussed it. I wrote it at JS Online. His resume, like it's you can't keep him out now. I mean, if they win, it's ironclad. If they don't win, I still think he's in. Yep, I think he's in.
It's been pretty remarkable. But yeah, I'm really interested in this new era of Bucks basketball. I wonder, and again, maybe this is the next podcast, after we hear from Adrian Lafleury, like, are there parallels to a Matt LaFleur, you know, where LaFleur came in with this very veteran team and sort of expectations and a, you know, legacy superstar. And they had a lot of success early, you know. I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. And I guess it's to play out fast. I guess that's the only thing to take away is, yeah, he's a coach. He's going to have a learning curve. But that's got to be a really, really, it's not sharp. Is it sharp or is it steep? I don't know the right phrase there, but it's got to be a fast one.
It is a roller
right?
coaster. Like whatever the curve is doing,
yeah,
it's a roller
gotta
coaster.
It's got to happen fast. It's got to happen
faster. All right. Well, we'll talk more about it surely on the Point Forward podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think. You can find us all on Twitter. He's at Jim Ozarski. She's at Lori Nickel. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. And we would love to chat with you about it. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.